This morning, I would like us to begin by thinking about the importance of questions, the purpose of questions. Questions, you see, are how we learn. A young child asks, "Why is the sky blue?" And as a parent, you give the obvious answer. The sky is blue because of Rayleigh scattering. Electromagnetic radiation, which is light, is scattered by particles in the sky, and because blue light is a much shorter wavelength that is much more easily scattered by these particles, so it ends up being the color we see. And thus the child learns. Questions are also a part of how we grow in our faith. And you see, beloved, we, like children, are invited to ask questions. We are encouraged to ask questions. But questions can be tricky, can't they? Sometimes we ask the wrong question, or we ask an unhelpful question. Sometimes the question we ask is not really the question we have because we are too afraid to ask the question we want to. Or we don't know how to ask the real one. And sometimes our questions have a more simple question underneath them. A child is not asking for an explanation of electromagnetic radiation when the child asks, "Why is the sky blue?" Or when your son comes to you and asks, "Will you come to my dance recital?" The more simple question he is asking is, "Will you show your love and support for me?" So we are left doing our best to try and understand what the actual question being asked is, or to try and understand what the right question we should ask. And so I would like us to look at three different questions this morning. The first question comes to us from our gospel reading. We find Jesus answering a question posed to him by his disciples in the previous chapter. It begins, "Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. 'Do you see all these things?' he asked. 'Truly, I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down.' And his disciples ask him, 'When will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?' And Jesus spends the rest of that chapter only sort of answering their questions. But now in this chapter, we find Jesus answering a different question, a question the disciples did not ask, but maybe should have. You see, Jesus is more concerned with what we are to do right now. Last week, we heard Jesus tell us the first thing we are to do right now is to take our lamps, our jars of oil, and wait. Prepare, be ready, and wait. But this morning, the question that our gospel is bidding us to ask is, what are we to do while we wait? What are we to do while we wait for the coming of the age, while we wait for the arrival of the bridegroom? What are we to do in our everyday lives as we wait for the consummation of the kingdom coming? This is the question I also want us to ask this morning. To answer that question, Jesus tells us of a man going on a trip who summons his three servants to him and gives them 5, 2, and 1 talent, respectively. The first two servants used their talents in trade and doubled what they had been given. But the servant who had been given 1 talent digs a hole in the ground and hides what he has been given. When the man returns, the servants who had doubled what they had been given are rewarded by being praised as good and trustworthy. Their master not only puts them in charge of many things, but invites them to enter into the joy of your master. But the servant who had received the 1 talent comes to his master, confessing that he knows his master to be a harsh man who gathered where he had not sown or scattered seed, so he had hidden the 1 talent in the ground and was thereby able to return it to him. The master, however, is not impressed and calls him wicked and lazy. His master observes that if the servant knew that he reaped and gathered what he had not sown, he could have at least put the money in the bank so as to gather interest. So he takes the money from him and gives it to the servant with 10 talents. For those with more will be given more, but the worthless servant is to be thrown in outer darkness. The servants are trusted with an unimaginable amount of money in one lump sum. And the one in whom the master puts the greatest trust made a vast sum of money. But to do so, he had to take a risk. If his plan for using the money entrusted to him failed, that servant would never dream of being able to pay back his master. This parable, you see, tells us of three persons entrusted with great responsibility. Even the one who was given the care of a single talent was entrusted with much. Each of them would have to risk much if they wanted to show a return on this investment. And the first two servants doubled the master's money, and each was rewarded with more. But not money for themselves, for they did not consider this gift to be something to be possessed. But the last servant risked nothing. He took what was entrusted to him and hid it. It was a safe move. There was little risk in digging a hole and burying the money. There was also no potential gain. And for not taking any risk with the money entrusted to him, the servant gets the worst possible punishment. The servant feared what he had been given. He had feared losing it. And as a result, he tried to turn this gift into a possession, which is contrast to the first two servants who recognized that to try and secure the gifts they had been given means that the gift would be lost. So clearly, Jesus has not answered the question the disciples have posed, when will the temple be destroyed, nor has he given them a clear answer to their question concerning the signs that will signal Jesus' coming at the end of the age. Rather, Jesus has told them how they must learn to wait in this time between times and what they are to do in this liminal space. You see, to enter into the joy of our master, we must invest what we have been given. The second question I would like us to look at comes to us from Dostoevsky's famous book, The Brothers Karamazov. Very early on, Dostoevsky introduces a wise old character named Father Zosima. Father Zosima is the abbot of a monastery and a kind of stand-in, an icon for Eastern Orthodoxy. And in one particular scene, we are told about a people coming to Father Zosima for advice, counsel, and blessings. And one particular woman approaches the abbot with her daughter, exclaiming that he had healed her, but in a twist, typical of Russian literature, she goes on to make a confession. Her confession is that she has no faith. "What will give me my faith back?" she exclaims. "Oh, miserable me! I look around and see that for everyone else, almost everyone, it is all the same. No one worries about it anymore, and I am the only one that can't bear it. It is devastating, devastating." Father Zosima responds, "No doubt it is devastating. One cannot prove anything here, but it is possible to be convinced. One can be convinced by the experience of active love. Try to love your neighbors actively and tirelessly. The more you succeed in loving, the more you'll be convinced of the existence of God and the immortality of your soul. And if you reach complete selflessness in the love of your neighbor, then undoubtedly you will believe. This has been tested. It is certain." The question being asked to Father Zosima, "What will give me my faith back?" is given a rather interesting answer. Go and love others. But this answer and question is not unique to Russian literature. And so our third question I would like us to look at this morning comes to us from Dorothy Day. She spent her life asking, as Christians, how are we to exist in this world that is filled with the oppressed and the poor? And her response to her own question was very similar to Father Zosima's. She worked closely with the poor, the marginalized, and the blue-collar workers who are so often taken advantage of. She participated in workers' rights marches, picketed with those who had been taken advantage of, and worked tirelessly with the poor. Her answer was to practice the spiritual works of mercy, which are to admonish the sinner, to instruct the ignorant, to counsel the doubtful, to comfort the sorrowful, to bear wrongs patiently, to forgive all injuries, and to pray for the living and the dead, and to practice the corporal works of mercy, which are to feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, to clothe the naked, ransom the captive, harbor the harborless, visit the sick, and bury the dead. The questions we have this morning: what will give me my faith back? And as Christians, how are we to exist in this world that is filled with the oppressed and the poor? And the question: what are we to do while we wait for the coming kingdom? Are all the same. We are asking, how are we to live? And the answer to these questions are all the same as well. Go and love others. Beloved, you have been given a love beyond measure. So we are to invest this love in others. We are to give food to the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, welcome the stranger, clothe the naked, and care for the sick. But this is no small task, is it? To love others as we have been loved is inherently a vulnerable task. To bear one's soul in love to another is a risk. It's hard, it's scary. But friends, we cannot consider the love we have been given a possession to be hoarded away in secret. We must take this love and give it to others no matter the risk. As St. Basil teaches us, the bread you retain belongs to the hungry. The dress you lock up is the property of the naked. The shoes you let rot belong to the barefoot. The money in your vaults belong to the destitute. What is superfluous for one's need is to be guarded as plunder if one retains it for oneself. In a moment, you are going to be reminded through bread and wine, body and blood, of the unmeasurable love and grace that you have been given. You will be shown Christ and his love for you, the gifts of God for the people of God. But then we will also pray, now send us forth a people forgiven, healed, renewed, that we may proclaim your love to the world. Beloved, you have been shown an unmeasurable amount of love. Now go and do likewise. Amen.